Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. I'm your host, Becky Davidson. And, you know, we love getting to share stories of other special needs families here at the podcast. And today, I get to introduce you to my new friend, Anne Scherf. I met Anne back in the summer. She attended By the Brook virtually, and she has been part of several of our different community groups. And she's actually in the community group that I'm a part of on Sunday afternoons. And I've gotten to know her through that group. And, you know, she is an amazing mom. And she has been a mom to her three boys who have special needs. Her oldest son with special needs is 47 years old. So she has been on this journey a long time and is full of wisdom and knowledge. And the thing I love about Anne is that she loves to learn and she loves to share what she's learned with others. Not only has she been a special needs mom for 47 years, but Anne has also been married for 53 years. And she shares some of the lessons that she's learned along the way to help her have a strong marriage. So I cannot wait for you to get to meet my friend, Anne. One of the other things that I so respect about Anne is that she's willing to share the raw and real realities of her life. And she's willing to share some of those hard stories, some of the things that she's experienced in her life that have been extremely hard and challenging. But we also want to give you, as our listeners, kind of a heads up that some of the things that she shares may be harder for some of you to hear. So we want to be sensitive to you and just let you know that if you are more sensitive, you may want to skip this episode. And just kind of give you a heads up about that. It may also be one that if you listen to the podcast along with your kids, you may want to listen to it first before you let them have a listen. But we so respect that she doesn't sugarcoat her life. She shares all that has happened, but then how God has used that in such a great and mighty way. And now, as I said, Anne and I got to meet through the community group that she's a part of with me on Sunday afternoons. And if you're not aware, we at Rising Above offer lots of different opportunities for special needs parents to come together to get to have community with each other in our groups. To learn more, just go to our website, risingaboveministries.org. We'll have links in the show notes for you to be able to find out more information. We have new groups starting in January, and we are so excited to be able to offer opportunities for families to get to be together. Not only do we have groups for moms, for dads, but we also have groups for siblings. And starting this year, we're going to have a group for our friends with special needs, our adult friends with special needs. And we are so excited to be able to offer that to the special needs community. So to learn more, just go to our website, risingaboveministries.org. So I know you're going to enjoy getting to meet my friend Anne as she shares some of the life lessons she's learned on her journey as a special needs mom. Hey, Anne, thank you so much for joining me today for the Rising Above podcast. I am so excited to get to share your story because it is amazing. So thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for asking me.
You know, I have to tell you, you know, when we look back at the pandemic and all of the craziness that has gone on and over all these months, you know, I can honestly say one of the things that has been a huge blessing is getting to meet moms like you. We would have never met, more than likely, had it not been for the pandemic. And through that, you heard about By the Brook and came to By the Brook. And then you and I get to do life together on Sunday afternoons now through our community group. And it's just been great to get to know you and get to hear your story.
I feel the same too. I never would have met you or really probably wouldn't have stumbled across Rising Above Ministries if it hadn't been for the pandemic.
And so that we can look back and be grateful for that. But you know, I was reading your bio and, you know, I knew a lot of these things about you, but wow, Anne, you've lived a phenomenal life. You are a very strong woman. And I look at all the different things you've done. I look at the people who are part of your family. And, you know, you are such an example to other moms of how you do this for the long haul, how you do it well. And so that's why I'm so excited for people to get to hear from you today. Now, you've been married to your husband, Dave. This is amazing. 53 years. Congratulations. Yes. I mean, that's huge. 53 years.
And I also did, I almost didn't meet him.
Tell about that.
Dave was in the Air Force with one of my brothers in Alaska. He's in Anchorage. And my brother met his wife there, and she invited me to come and be in the wedding. And I said yes. And then I hadn't heard from her for a while. So I changed my mind and decided I wasn't going to go. And I wrote a letter. I missed the mailman. And in the mail was a letter from her giving me more information. I never sent the letter. And I met him at the airport. He was there, came with my brother to pick me up in Anchorage, and he was my escort in the wedding. So, and I came home, and I had some issues with my mother. She was a single mom, and I was the only child that she had raised out of five. The other four went with our father and his new wife. And she would read my mail. She has reading my mail. I had nothing to hide, but it was just sort of, she's going through my stuff. And I had it. And I was at a point, I just packed my car up and I drove to Alaska. We lived in Marcellus, which is near Syracuse, New York. It was thousands of miles.
Oh my goodness, Ann.
Took off and I went back. And when I went back, we started dating. And the first place he took me to, if you want to call it a date, was the church.
Oh, wow.
And I was there about a month he proposed, and then he left shortly after that, went temporary duty to Texas, and then he was coming home to East Aurora, which is near Buffalo, New York. So, and then I got to see him at the end of this was 1966. I saw him in December of 1966 when he had a layover on the way to Vietnam. And then he spent the rest of the year, 67, he came home around Thanksgiving in 1967, and got married on December 9th. But so it was a relationship that was through letters.
I love that. And out of your marriage, you all have had 5 children. Tell us about your children. And you've got 3 who have special needs. So share a little bit about your kiddos.
Well, I have to add my sister-in-law. Dave's sister also has a disability. She's 2 years older than he is. So he grew up as a sibling. So we ended up having 5 children. There's a 15 years age range between the 5 children. And all 3 sons have a developmental disability. There's autism involved with them, and our youngest, who's still at home, Matthew, is deaf. But we found out in 2017 through some genetic testing, because my son Jonathan, he's the 4th child, has self-injurious behaviors. And so just wondering if there's something genetically or something that could, And they found out that he has Smith-Lemli-Optis syndrome, and all 3 of them do, and it's where it has to do with the amount of cholesterol that's manufactured and how that's utilized in the body. But all 3 of them, from what I've seen, I went to a national conference, that they're very much on the mild range compared to some other individuals that have this syndrome. But that is the cause of their developmental disabilities.
I have seen Matthew multiple times, because he'll pop in when we have our community group from time to time. Yeah. So we've gotten to see Matthew. So Matthew lives at home with you, but your other 2 sons, they are in homes, right?
Right. They're in community residence. Jonathan, he had spent 222 days in the hospital. He had gone in with an episode of self-injurious behavior. And I said, I can't take him home unless you give me extra support, in-home support. And the state agencies didn't want to do that. So he was stuck there. And so he ended up getting an apartment, which is his own space, and he has 24/7 staffing there. So that was really a blessing
That's
for him.
And then you have another son. Yeah, who's your, tell us about your other son.
Yeah, Michael is our oldest, and he lives in our community, and it's at a building where there's 8 apartments. There's it's a group home, but it has 24/7 staffing. They have nurse and staff.
You shared a little bit about Jonathan and about his self-injurious behaviors, and I know a lot of families deal with that, but you were dealing with it to quite a different level that many parents don't face. So you had an experience with him. Share a little bit about that and that life-altering incident that happened.
Well, maybe to back up a little bit, I a piece of that was, I didn't know at the time that Jonathan was having panic attacks. The anxiety, it was coming out of anxiety, I think, for his relationship with Matthew. He would tease Matthew, and Matthew would have meltdowns, and then Jonathan would get upset. So that anxiety kind of swirled right around in there. In March 25th, 2003, the IRA that Michael lives in, my oldest son lives in, my sister-in-law also has an apartment in that too, that same place. I was helping my sister-in-law move in and dealing with my mother-in-law crying because Joan was moving in. But I got a phone call from my husband, and he says, you get come home, Jonathan, you know, he's bleeding, he hurt himself. So I raced home. We were 4 miles from it. I went through a few traffic lights, but I got home. The ambulance were here, and the police came. And at that point, Jonathan was—he was downstairs, and they had him on the couch, and they had him bandaged, and he was getting an IV hooked up. My son Matthew came home on the bus, came in the house, and saw this chaos. And he started running upstairs, and the police officer was here, and he yelled at him. He says, "Don't go up there." I says, "He's deaf. He has autism. He doesn't understand you." So he went up and got him. And I thought, I was thankful that he didn't, you know, do something to him, because apparently, you know, I didn't know all the pieces at the time, but that area upstairs, well, this room I'm in, was, you know, kind of zoned off, because that's what had happened. The ambulance came, and since I wasn't home, I could go with Jonathan, and my husband had to stay home because he had been here. When I was in the ambulance, I was calling some people at church, and I asked them to pray for Jonathan. And I got a call. There's a call back. The ambulance got a call from, I guess, the police, and saying they'd found a knife upstairs. And I was so thankful that my husband didn't see the knife. It was like a paring knife, and it was on the nightstand, and it was dark handled. And he didn't. My husband told me later a little bit about what happened with all that. I didn't know the whole story, but Jonathan had come home from school, and he came in his normal routine. My husband was downstairs in his office, and he heard him come in. He went upstairs, and he heard something fall, and he thought, you know, just, oh, Jonathan's dropped something again. But my husband said he felt this nudge. He said that he needed to go, and he went to this bottom of the stairs, and he called Jonathan's name. No response. So he ran upstairs. He found Jonathan laying on the floor, and he was face down, and he thought he was dead. And he picked him up, and he kind of, you know, came around a little, and he saw he was bleeding from his chest. And the ambulance on the way, it's probably about 35-40 minute drive. They said they made, I don't know how long it took, but they said they were really moving. And
sure
they
were,
And I had a call. I was told at the time that he didn't know that there was no surgeon available at all. There was no heart surgery. They were either in surgery or they're too far away. There was no one there that would be there when they got there. The chaplain greeted me. You know, they took him one way, and the chaplain came out, and I'm thinking, it must be bad if the chaplain's here. I didn't feel like I needed a chaplain, but, you know, he was there waiting for me. And I was really peaceful, because I knew the strong sense of peace came over me on the way. I said, I felt like, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen to Jonathan, if he was going to live or die, but it was going to be okay. And it was just a sense. I didn't, as I said, it wasn't being okay that he's going to live. Whatever happened, God was in control and he would be okay. And so the chaplain took me to, and they took Matthew on. The chaplain took me in a little room to pray, and he started praying. And all of a sudden he stops, and the doctor comes in, and she's looking at me. She says, well, he's got a collapsed lung. And I said, yeah. Well, we have to go in. So I didn't know he'd stabbed himself in the heart at that point, but I knew she wasn't telling me everything.
Right.
The other piece, when we arrived, there was a surgeon that got finished up with the patient that he was working on, and was able to come in and work on Jonathan. So they did repair, and 10 days later they had to do more because they had missed some holes because of emergency surgery. There was probably clotted and they didn't get them out.
But right.
So it's a miracle. I mean, the doctor would come in his room and he'd sit there and he'd look at him. He'd just like, he'd shake his head like, you're not supposed to live.
Wow. Wow. And do you know what had set him off? Did you ever find out what had upset him to make him do that, or just?
I think he was having a panic attack, and he was trying to, I think he like, uh-oh, I did this. I mean, I don't think he was trying to commit or kill himself or commit suicide. Right. I think that he's just, I don't know. And he doesn't remember what happened. Mm-hmm. Which I can understand the shock put out. And again, it was a miracle.
Yeah. And what a beautiful gift, to have that peace of knowing, of just going, okay, this may not go the way that I want it to go, but for God to give you that peace either way, that it was going to be okay.
Two things are very important. One of them was that a woman at our church, what I would call her a prayer warrior, this is our old church. When I saw her the next time at church, she came up and gave me a hug, and she was crying and saying how, sorry, it happened, that we'd gone through. But she had said that night when that happened, she got the urge to pray for Jonathan. And she prayed for him a period of time, and her time period, and then she felt it was okay to stop. But the time period that she prayed for matched the time of what it hit when he stabbed himself in the heart and being in surgery. So I needed to share that. The other, at that time, I was a chairperson of the Children's Committee for the New York State Developmental Disabilities Planning Council, and I was concerned of how the police responded to Matthew, and I said, what ifs? So I went back, and they get federal money to do programmings or to develop programs. And so I said, what kind of training's out there for first responders? Mm-hmm. So I kind of pushed and shoved, and they ended up putting an RFP out eventually. And Niagara University received the funding to develop training for first responders. And it started out with New York State being the focus for first responders, and it's become a national kind of training event. And the person that ended up doing it is a father of he has a son with a disability, too. So he brings his perspective. And so I kind of, when I see him, in my own head, I named that Jonathan's initiative.
I love it. And just out of that tragedy, out of that very, very, very challenging situation, now first responders are being trained. We actually, I don't know if it's the same training that they offer here in our community, but I know that our officers go through training as well. And it was a father developed it. And so it may be the same thing. I don't know. But how amazing to know that out of that tragedy, out of that hardship, now other people are learning how to respond to our children with special needs. So,
yes. Yeah. I've had it a few other times, and it's just in situations that were really, this is probably, I should say, the most trying situation that I
can't imagine. Yeah. Well, I know just from getting to know you over these past, I guess, 5 or 6 months, that your faith plays a very big role in your life, and church is, you're very involved in your church. And I know that you have had, we, as most special needs parents have, we've all had situations where we've been in really, really great situations and setups with a church family, and then other times where it's not been. And so right now you're in a really good spot, aren't you? And I would love for you to share kind of where you are now and what that looks like for Matthew, because it sounds like you're in a place where they have just loved and embraced him for Matthew. And I love that.
But we didn't get here easy. I mean, we went to the former church, the same, we're Lutheran, and it was a Lutheran church, the other one, we'd been there 29 years. Matthew had grown up. He'd been there all of his life. Mm-hmm. And at the point that, I don't know, his behavior, I don't know, really, it was probably more than one person. And, you know, the sin goes into church, you know,
right.
People are sinners, so they go to church. It's not perfect.
Right.
And he was asked to sit in the back of the church, and there's no way. He's deaf, and we had an interpreter for the church, and I interpreted sometimes, but said because he was moving his papers or his bags around too much, it was distracting, they needed to sit back. But that happened like all of a sudden, so I don't realize it was. So we left. My husband got the call, he left initially, and he who never always went to church. You wouldn't have to, there was no point. I argue. I mean, it was, we go to church. That's what it is.
Right.
And he said he wasn't going back. They're all alike. And I didn't believe that. But Sunday mornings, after this, we got in that call, Matthew would follow me around the house crying with a shirt from our church, wiping the tears away.
Oh, goodness.
And a picture of the church. So I went shopping for churches. I went online. I interviewed. I went to church. Yeah. I interviewed the pastor because I knew I couldn't go visiting. I had to make a decision.
Right.
And hopefully the best decision to go there, because Matthew would not he doesn't transition well, and I couldn't do that. So we ended up with this one church. My husband, this time, he went with me when I interviewed the pastor. We had decided we were going to give this church a try. I go here, was to get Matthew there, and I had to bribe him with some stores. I had to bribe him.
He loves to shop, doesn't he?
Right.
Matthew,
yes,
loves
he does.
To shop.
Right.
Yeah,
he shops till he drops.
Yep.
So I had to bribe him by going. He likes, he likes both sisters, but this one sister he likes in particular because he likes to play Wii with her. Wii U. And so I said, we'll go to her house, and then we would go. I had to kind of a roundabout way to get to church. Our former church is 14 miles away, and the church we're going to now is 28 miles one way. So I bribed him that way and got him. The first Sunday I got him there, I got him in the door of the church. And I had to stand by the door because he was ready to bolt. And I let him. I told him we would leave after the sermon. So we got into the sermon. And then we left. So then this next Sunday was the similar kind of thing. And it got him in. And like before, the other church said he had to sit in the back. He sat in the back of the church on the floor. He wouldn't sit in a pew. And he would peek around the pew looking at the pastor.
Oh, wow.
And that went on for 3 weeks. But it was able, I got him through the whole service. And I know people probably, no one said anything or cruel, but I know,
people are curious.
Yeah, they were curious.
Right.
Yeah, and it was kind of a friendly curiousness. Christmas Day, he came in. He went right up to the front, sat down in that pew, and that's where he's been since. And I thought, when he went up front and sat in that pew, I said, we're here.
We're here. And so how did the church then respond to him? Because I know, he's not going to sit still. He's got different behaviors that are so normal for us. But the people looking on, they're different. And so how have they embraced you and your family?
Well, the pastor said that we've been a blessing to them because we've brought some different perspectives into it. The first year or so, they asked me to teach a sign language class, but I did to several members of the church. So I did that. They were curious. So they wanted to communicate more, with him. I interpret for him every Sunday, and they've made space for me that accommodate me to do that. They offered to include them to be ushers, and they're very welcoming to do whatever you want to do. And when we have we're not having church dinners now, but church dinners, they'll get up, Michael, and all of them will get up and clean up, and help, without just volunteer to serve.
I love that, and I love it when I hear of families who have found a spot that so perfectly meets their needs, and it sounds like you guys have for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I love the fact, this is amazing to me. You've been married 53 years. Mm-hmm. 53 years, Anne. I mean, there's not many people, especially special needs parents, who can say that. And so I would love for you to share from your heart, just, you know, I know there are so many parents right now who are struggling, and I know people who are walking away right now, walking away from their marriage. And what would you say to them? What are some things that you and your husband put into place in your marriage? I know it hasn't been perfect. No marriage is perfect. No. But what are things that you guys have done that might be something that would be a help to some other parents who maybe are struggling right now?
One of the things that I go back to, and it really annoyed me, it was professional and educational system. And I think it was with Michael. He made a comment at a meeting saying that parents that have children with special needs don't stay together. Mm-hmm. You know, which is really non-supportive, and started trying to support them. But I had made the commitment, you know, in all situations, I made a commitment to Dave when we got married, and I respect that. And I needed to honor that commitment before God to stay together. It hasn't been easy. And it's been challenges. One time, it goes back to Matthew, I was really clinically depressed, and I was getting pregnant, and Matthew saved my life, you know, so, you know, at that point, that was, you know, I was ready to leave. I'd had it because I had, Jonathan was, he was born with a cleft palate. He had, I struggled for 8 weeks, I think it was, trying to feed him, and it was all on me. I would feed him and he'd throw it up. Mm. It would come out of his nose. I mean, it was just, and he was the fourth child, so it wasn't like alone. And
right,
you know, and it, all the childcare, it ended up on me. And then when he had the G-tube put in, it was still continued to be struggles. And part of the way I found out, besides he had the cleft palate repaired eventually, but he was allergic to dairy products. So
oh my goodness.
Even though I was pumping breast milk, he was getting dairy products through my breast milk.
Mm.
And it doesn't happen right away. It wasn't really connected, but it was another mother that happened to mention about the dairy products and breast milk that it kind of light bulb went on. Again, it goes back to the commitment, and I've been in therapy with a Christian counselor, and mm-hmm. that's helped too. It's come even more, and I think more in the pandemic because we've been tied in more or loosed. And I've been left with a responsibility in the family lots of times.
Right.
He was a teacher right. and he retired. And so it's, I kind of feel that the way my sons think, he thinks it kind of more like he's not such a global thinker. It's, he likes things that are more head on and, you know, structure. He needs more structure in his mm-hmm. thinking. And I think more the big
picture. Right, right.
So I'm seeing the big picture, and I see what it is. And I have to figure out how to present that picture so it's understandable. My sons taught me to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to kind of think from where they're coming from in order to help to support them. And I think that goes back to relationship too. If you can kind of think maybe where they're coming from and how they view things, you can approach it differently.
Right.
I remember this one time that I was really depressed, and my husband didn't say anything. He just gave me a caring touch, and that touch meant more than anything, mm. any words he could have said. Right. You know, I'm here to, that said to me, I'm here to support you. And I think it's looking to do things you enjoy together.
And you all recently got to get a little getaway. I know you got it. I was so happy to hear that you in the midst of having all your responsibilities and in the middle of a pandemic, you made it a priority for your anniversary to get away this year. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah. And it was, as I said, it was a bed and breakfast. It's out way out in the country, and there was only one other couple there. They had 11 rooms, and everything was, you know, sanitized, and they served you rooms so you could be away, you know. And it was really, it was nice just to be there and to get away from the demands. And I was hoping that the coverage stays in place and having kind of backup for the backups. But
for the boy, yeah,
for Matthew, yes.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I really commend you for, you know, saying that you made a vow, you made a commitment before God and to your husband. And, you know, I think so often, I've said this so many times, you know, when Jeff and I got married, we were so young, we had no idea. You know, you say those vows and yet you have no clue how they're going to be tested, right, over the years.
I had my grandparents as a model. They were married, you know, I mean, I was trying to think how many years, but I mean, they were married 65 or so years. Wow. Before my grandfather passed away. And they made a commitment to each other. My parents, you know, were divorced when I was an infant, but I look towards that model of my grandparents as being something. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Well, you know, one of the things that I so respect about you as well is, you know, you're an advocate. You are out there. You send me articles all the time about different conferences and different things that are going on. You are, after all these years, still learning. You are still growing. You are still going to conferences. You are still, you haven't stopped trying to find ways to help not only your children with special needs, but others. And I think that is amazing. And so why is that so important to you?
Because I just recently did a virtual immersion training for ECHO, which is Educating Community Health Outcomes. And the doctor that founded this in the early 2000s was saying that knowledge should be shared. It's not owned. He said when he dies, all his knowledge and skills is gone unless he shares it. It shouldn't have to be paid for. And if I can share information to make somebody else's life or journey easier, and they don't have to search for it, you know, I should be doing that. I'd be sharing that. It gives me satisfaction. Like I see something accomplished when I can share it, and it helps someone else to move on. Because why make them struggle to get what I can tell them, you know, they can get easier.
That's a great attitude. And I think, you know, I know it is life-giving when we, you know, I always love it when a mom who is way younger than I am, maybe just getting a diagnosis, comes along and I'm able to go, okay, well, this is how we navigated this. And so I love the fact that you are still learning and still getting knowledge that then you're passing on to others. You're not keeping it for yourself. You're sharing it. And so I think what an example you are for other moms.
Thank you. Thank you. It's the sharing that's important. I had a thought and I lost it. But when you talked about, you know, learning and passing it on, but I guess I feel like I'm a lifelong learner, that it's not too old to learn. There's some things I don't like to learn, you know, I don't strive for, but there's others that, you know, that comes easier for
me. Easier for you. Because I got to tell you, some of these classes that you go to would not be on the top of my list of something that I would want to go do. So I'll let you get the knowledge and then you can pass on to me what I need to know. So I think that's great. Now, Anne, you've been walking this walk a long time. You've been, your oldest child with special needs is how old?
He's born in 74, so he's going to be 47 in March, of 2021.
So 47 years you've been walking this journey as a special needs mom. What would you say to these younger moms who are just starting out?
A couple things that crossed my mind I was a surprise to my mother. I wasn't expected birth. They were in the middle of divorce. Matthew was an expected child. He was a gift of God to us. Matthew means gift, and I of God, and that's what we chose that for him. But my great grandmother said to my mother, she was upset she was pregnant. She says, maybe this child will be a blessing in your old age. And I want to think my mother is very much of a challenge, and she was abusive to me. And I forgave her at some point as an adult after I had kids. I forgave her when I understood where she's coming from, her history. So that freed me to care for her, which was a blessing. So I kind of hope that I was a blessing to her.
I have no doubt you were. Yeah.
So I think that our children, even though Matthew doesn't appreciate a lot I do, it gives him joy and it gives me happiness because he feels good about what I do. But I have to remember he's the gift and God has given to him. Our children is a gift to us, and how we are serving God when we serve our children. And that doesn't mean give them, let them do whatever they want, but absolutely. I mean, as parent, by parenting them in a, mm-hmm. in a positive way as possible, yeah. That we are serving God in that way. I thinking about it when Michael was, you know, first was Michael, and you kind of, you grow into it. Sometimes talking with peers with children the same age, they don't get it. Mm-hmm. Or they're not really getting it. Or even someone that hasn't gone, I'm more likely to listen to someone that has traveled the path longer. It's been more experienced exactly. than someone right. that's new, that's, you know, right in saying that. But I try to look at Michael for his lifetime, what, you know, some things, opportunities, and not just preschool or school, but, you know, what are some things maybe that he could have or work for, you know, in the long run. So it's, I think it's looking more at the big picture and looking at the possibilities and seeing mm-hmm. not the disabilities, but seeing the abilities right. piece of it and seeing them as a person and not mm-hmm. as a label.
Right. And isn't that what we want everybody to do with our children, to yeah. see them, you know, for who they are and not through autism or through any diagnosis that they may have, but to see them. And uh-huh. so that's a great word to give to young families who are just starting out on this journey. And I just want to thank you. Thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I've so enjoyed getting to know you over these past few months. And again, I'm so grateful that out of the pandemic, out of this crazy, crazy season, God brought you in to do community with us, even though it's through Zoom every Sunday. But it's great to get to know other people are praying for each other and doing life together. And so mm-hmm. I'm grateful that I get to do that with you each week. And I thank you for being willing to share part of your story. I know there's more stories than we could even imagine that you have to share, but I thank you for sharing what you were able to share today. And I know it's going to be a blessing to our listeners. So thank you, Anne.
Well, thank you for asking again. I appreciate it. Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.